The Dave McGillivray Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGillivrayFoundation.org for more information.
B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program. Felger and Maserati on Red Sox opening day. You enjoy the festivities, Maz?
Yeah, marginally. Can I tell you why?
Yeah.
I wanted to enjoy the festivities. I wanted to enjoy them. But while they were announcing the players to go out and get their rings, which to me is sort of the whole point of the day, they had the music up so loud on the broadcast that you couldn't hear the crowd, really. Well, what's the point of that? Like, the whole point is to hear Nathan Eovaldi get his applause. Like, that, right. That to me is what the whole thing's about. Like, I want to hear who gets... So I blame this on Nesson. And being the cynic I am, I said this before he came on the air, and I know you've been running around. So the part of me wonders, I don't know, were the Red Sox worried they might get some booze, and so they played the music up so you couldn't hear it on your TV?
Crazy.
Like, I know that's totally cynical of me to believe that. But, like, I wanted to hear, clearly, Eovaldi, Price, and those guys, based on what I could gather, they had the loudest ovations, but that's what I wanted to hear. I wanted to hear those moments, and I felt like I was deprived of it.
So listen, we're about 10 minutes away from opening pitch. We're not going to talk Red Sox when the game starts. So if you want to weigh in, Jimmy, would you release a hounds for me, please? 617-779-0985. You want to call and bitch about the opening ceremony? You want to get a baseball taken before the game begins? Here's your spot. Just about the next 10 minutes until they throw the first pitch. So here's the place for it. So the game presentation was a little loud. You didn't get the crowd noise, Maz. My issue, again, following up from yesterday, is the Patriots being there, but just the Patriots who are, you know, no Brady, no Belichick, no Kraft. The Kraft I get. But I just saw a picture of them all standing there with their trophies, and two of the guys holding the trophies for the Patriots, they had Gronkowski holding a trophy. I think they had Gilmore holding a trophy. But two of the guys holding the trophy, Matthew Slater and Joe Cardona.
Well, they're members of the team.
But what's really the point with this now? When you've got the long snapper in the pitcher there next to David Ortiz, is that really the idea here? To put the long snapper next to your Hall of Fame three-time champion Red Sox? So, and this is something, you know, we want to get into. Our buddy Lou there, Maloney, has a problem with them even bringing the Patriots in on this day altogether, which, you know, that's the only one I really heard a voice complaint about that. I sort of wonder if it's going to be Joe Cardona's day. Maybe he's got a point, but maybe he does otherwise. As a baseball guy, Maz, are you offended that this becomes a Patriots day of some kind?
So I am not offended. Okay. I am not, because I accepted the reality a long time ago of what this town now is. And it's a Patriots town. Like, and honestly, I think the whole thing is born out of that. I said this on TV last night. I don't know how you feel, but there's always been this little tug of war between the Red Sox and the Patriots, you know, and I'm going back to 15 years now, for the back page of the Herald at the time and the tabloid and the headlines of the Globe. And, you know, one side counting the number of inches dedicated to copy versus the other. And I think there's a similar thing that goes on with the media of the two teams.
Right. So can't you see a baseball guy being a little territorial?
Yes, totally. Absolutely. That's how I said yes.
You know, not just media, but in Lou's case, an actual Red Sox.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what I think it's born out of, is territorial competitive bullcrap. And honestly, I think it comes off as petty, just my two cents. And again, and look, you know, I think the world of Lou. But the reality is I think it's all born out of that. And I accepted the reality a long time ago. Okay, so as you like to say, acceptance is the price of freedom.
There you go, Miss.
So I look at that and say, look, it is what it is. Back then, the football guys were pissed off because the Red Sox were getting all the attention when the Patriots won in Super Bowls. And again, I'm going back 15 years now. Now the shoe's on the other foot. So what goes around comes around. That's part of the deal. So again, I personally am not offended by it. No, but I'm telling you what it's born out of.
So, and You know, and I come in from a little bit more of a neutral place. I'm more a football guy than a baseball guy, like most people. I think it's a great Boston Day. It's just a great Boston Day to have all those trophies out there in the middle of Fenway Park, which is still the most important building in Boston. Like, I'll give you that. At Fenway is a far more meaningful building than Gillette. So you have all those trophies out there in that moment for Boston. It's a great Boston moment. That's why I'm pissed that Brady's not there. Like, what are you doing? So, I think it should be more of a Patriots Day, in other words. But I get where a baseball guy would feel that way. Like, I do. Like, I totally get it. It's just sort of the state of the sports that, you know, on Patriots opening night, they'll probably have the Red Sox come out. And no one's going to care on the football side because you know why?
Because the Patriots rule the town now.
The baseball team's not going to overshadow
exactly
what the Patriots are doing. But today, even with the Red Sox handing out rings and raising a banner, the Patriots and Tom Brady and those guys being there overshadows them a little bit.
Yeah, so again, it's about who owns the town and feeling threatened by it and all of that. That's what it is. And so again, you know, to me, I accepted this reality a long time ago. I think this is a nice thing for Gronk. I mean, Gronk announced his retirement. Nobody has really heard from him or seen him since. And so this is his first public appearance at Fenway Park. Gronk deserved a little bit of a send-off. He did. He was that important of an athlete in this town. He deserved a moment. And honestly, I don't think this is enough.
Okay.
But that said, I'm glad he got this today.
I invited you to give me your thoughts on the opening day before the game starts, because when it does, we're not going to talk Red Sox. So here you go. Ben in East Taunton, your thoughts on the ring ceremony.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I watched it. And the big thing that stuck out to me was, did you guys think it was awkward seeing Henry's wife there? Like, what is she doing there? Tom Werner is a little worm, but even he's smart enough not to parade his wife out there. She's just standing there. Even the players going up to shake the hands, you can tell it's awkward for them. Like, she doesn't belong up there. What is she doing?
Okay, well,
she's like the 1B in charge.
She's gaining more and more, more and more influence as the days go on. So,
I don't know. Red Sox, though?
I bet.
I don't know. I mean, I asked the same question the caller did, and not to be mean or nasty. A bunch of people were out here just outside our studio. I have a big screen and lobby out there, and people were watching the introduction, you know, the ring ceremony, rather. And I did say, why is Linda Pizzuti out there? Like, I understand she's the owner's, principal owner's wife. I get that. But typically, she doesn't really have that much to do with the team, I don't think. And so, again, it's a ring ceremony, so if it's on behalf of the family, I guess, whatever. But I don't look at the Red Sox as being family-owned. I look at them as being John Henry as part of a group that owns the Red Sox and the principal owner.
You can feel the presence growing, though.
Yes,
you can.
You can feel the presence growing by the day.
She's
absolutely
already got her sustainable garden on Fenway Park and little things like that. Like, all right.
Yeah, I do. I feel. I don't know what the internal makeup is of the team and the ownership and the stakes and all of that, but externally, I'm with Murray. I feel her influence growing by the day. Wayne in Yarmouth, your thoughts?
Yeah, here we go again. After this 11-game mess, and beyond pitching, which we know has been lousy and has to improve, what do you guys see as the two or three things that have to happen in these first couple of games right now?
Okay, they got to get their heads out of their ass.
Yeah, that's number one.
And this leads to my baseball thought, and I never thought I'd say this. And that is, I think they could use Dustin Pedroia right now. I think the timing there is just sort of perfect. They need to get their head screwed on straight, need to focus up a little bit, turn the page, regain some motivation. And boy, if he's not the perfect guy on paper to give you that, he didn't win the championship last year. He's not resting on his laurels. He's not lacking No, he's just the opposite. He's trying to salvage his career here at the end. He's got a lot of motivation, a lot of focus. I don't know if he'll make it through physically, but I'm talking about a mindset. They need him and his mindset in there.
No question about it. I thought the same thought crossed my mind this morning. Good time for him to come back.
I never thought I'd say that about him because I thought they'd outlived his usefulness, but it's a good time for him to come back.
But the whole idea about his career being in jeopardy, here's a guy who's motivated to play. He's motivated to disprove people. He's trying to hold on to any last at bat he can get, for crying out loud. So the timing with Pedroia is good. They could use him right now. Another thing they could use is a comfortable lead.
Andrew,
that would help.
Andrew and Haverhill, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, guys? You know, I was a little surprised to see Schilling out there in the ceremony. I thought the Red Sox had kind of distanced themselves from him, and I thought that was kind of cool and a little interesting. I mean, Schilling, for me, from what he did in 2004, he's kind of bulletproof.
Okay, can I stop?
I didn't see Schilling, but again,
I didn't either. I heard Beetle talking about it.
I'm sorry.
Schilling was there, yeah.
He was. Okay, I'll take your word for it. I didn't see it.
I'm sorry.
It must have been at the end.
So continue, Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, he's a little clownish with the things he's done post-career, but what he did in 04, I'm sorry. For me, he's bulletproof, and I need to see him at all these ceremony-type things. What he did for the Red Sox was, you know, immeasurable, and yeah, he may be kind of an idiot, but he's bulletproof for me. I don't know about you guys, but he is for me.
Okay, he belongs out there on all those things. I would agree with you on that.
He does.
I mean, I don't know what you mean by bulletproof, but he should absolutely, positively be a prominent piece on all these things. I mean, I think his, you know, quote-unquote fall from grace, his fall from what he was, is one of the saddest stories, you know, that we've had. And
it's all 100% self-inflicted.
Yeah, probably. And I'm not talking like human tragedy. I'm just saying this guy should be a ledge, walk on water, never have to, you know, buy a drink for himself in town ever again. That guy, he should be Bobby Orr status. You know, he should be that kind of guy. And he's not. He's probably unfavorable rating's probably higher than his favorable rating. You know what I mean? If I asked you favorable, unfavorable, like a presidential thing, I don't know. I think his unfavorable might be higher than his favorable rating in Boston.
Yeah, he might. Look, on that, if you go back to 04, he's probably the second most important guy in that team. I mean, Ortiz, I think, was number one. So, you know, and again, you want to tell me it was Schilling number one, you could make an argument for it. What I wonder about, and again, I didn't see him out there today, but I'll take the caller's word for it. Lucchino's gone. I mean, they had a rift there for a little while, right? Because Schilling missed the whole, they signed him for $8 million, I think it was, in 08. He ended up missing the whole year because he had shoulder problem, I think it was, or maybe, I don't remember, some sort of arm injury. The Red Sox felt like he duped him out of money. There was a falling out there, and they didn't get along. And I think the core of it was probably Larry. So now that Larry's gone, Schilling's back. I mean, and honestly, I'm guessing, I don't know that, but I'm happy that it's happened because he does deserve a place there.
Brian in Fitchburg. Go ahead, Brian.
John Henry's wife had to be there just so they had someone young enough to help John out when he got confused.
Okay, We just stop with that. Linda wants to be a player. She's a player. She is a player. She owns the Globe. She runs the Globe. In Liverpool, she's like the first lady of Liverpool. And it doesn't quite translate here because John was established before she came along, but when they bought Liverpool, like it was like an ensemble deal. She wants to be a prominent player, and that's why I wonder about, you know, Maz had one of the all-time great questions in the history of interviews when he asked John Henry, when he barged in here 8 years ago, what happens when you die? Who gets the team? We were asking about Linda, and he said, no, it's not Linda, but that was 8 years ago. I wonder what's happened since, because I just feel like, and I'm not saying for better or worse, and I'm not, you know, passing judgment. I'm just telling you, I feel like she really wants to be at the table.
Yeah, you might be right. I just, and again, if you're talking about some of the, you know, the dressing around the ballpark or some of the additional things that go on with Nesson or the Globe, fine. In terms of the baseball operation, I can't see where she has any influence.
Richie in North Quincy, how'd you feel about Schilling being there?
I can really care less, to be honest with you. My beef is with you saying that he should be Bobby Orr status on here.
Yeah.
I'm not sure when you moved to Massachusetts, but if you grew up in the 70s and you even lived remotely near Boston, Bobby Orr was it. Chris Schilling couldn't hold nothing to him. I mean, give me a break.
Well, right. I mean, then give me another name. I'm just telling you, he should be an exalted figure here in town.
How about Espo?
Fine. I don't know. This is the problem with analogies, right? Because, no, he played for 8 years, and this guy, there's no perfect analogy. Just give me an exalted figure, a beloved, exalted, revered, respected sports figure in town. Pick any name you want. Schilling should be on that list. He should be on that list where he is completely put on that pedestal, completely remembered for 2004, for ending a curse, for, you know, all those things that he did, and he's not. That's not the first thing that you think of when you think of Schilling. You think of, like, Alex Jones nuts. You think about nuttiness, right? I mean, isn't that what you think of?
Yes, and taking down the video game
and
company
the video game
state of Rhode Island.
And
all
yeah,
of that.
You think about his yapper, and, like, again, you don't think of what you should think of, which he belongs in the pantheon of the great winners to ever come through this town, who came through with the most important win almost ever in the history of this town. That's not the first thing you think of anymore. And that's sad to me. That's what I think the Schilling story is. Okay, so The game's off and running. We're pretty much going to leave it to the side unless you want to go there. We got some stuff to get to. We got a lot of stuff to get to, in fact, today. And why don't we lead it off with a nugget on the Patriots and what they have coming up at the draft and what they're doing at 32. We'll get to that right after these words with your calls at 617-779-0985.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Hey, the 82 preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season, so don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, every opening tip to all those buzzer beaters, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. And if you're new to sports betting, it's super easy to get started. Try betting on something simple like a team to win, go to the app, select your team, and place your first bet. That's simple. And here's something to sweeten the deal. For new customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use the code SPORTSHUB. And if you're a new customer, you'll get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's only on DraftKings.
Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org. Must be 21+. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball terms.
Oh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the show, Felger and Maz. Jim Murray, Charlie Cashley apparently today said the Patriots are taking a quarterback at 32.
Yeah, I saw this. It was on NFL.com. He mocked his 1 through 32 the whole first round, and he has Drew Locke of Missouri going to the Patriots at number 32.
I love it. How do you feel about that?
I feel more confident than ever that the Patriots are now going to use that pick on a tight end or a wide receiver because this is Charlie Cashley and his stupid toupee making this pick. And Bill hates this guy. The quote, famously from Bill Belichick, who's been more wrong than Charlie Casserly? Again, those are his words, and he'll pass on Drew Luck simply to spite Charlie Casserly, even if he wants him.
I agree with you. Drew Lock.
Big kid out of Missouri.
Even if they like Drew Lock, and we're going to take him, now they won't.
Yeah.
Now they won't just to piss off Charlie Casserly, right?
Because Charlie Casserly's name's attached to this. Screw that. I'm not doing that.
Okay, so.
And the other thing, too, is most, I mean, look, you got to take any of this with a grain of salt anyway, but most prognosticators in mock drafts, they don't even have Locke going past, like, 15 anyway. So it's not like he's going to be there at 32. Most people have him going to Denver at 10. So Casserly's an idiot.
Your thoughts on Casserly and the quarterback, Maz?
I can't tell you a lot about the player. I don't watch a lot of college football, but I don't love the idea of them taking a quarterback in the first round. If there's a guy that they're in love with, great. But I think that, you know, I just want them to take a quarterback somewhere up relatively high. Like, they have 6 picks in the top 102. Can one of those be a quarterback?
Murray?
I don't want them taking any quarterback, especially in the first round. And especially if it was Locke, he's a senior. I don't want a senior quarterback. I want a kid that has enough talent that he comes out after, like, 1 season or 2 seasons that he has to play. You know, granted, he wants to get that money. It's the same thing you got to wait around for this Clemson quarterback for a couple of years. He's NFL ready now. A senior? No thanks.
I don't know. You remember the Bill Parcells theory when it came to drafting quarterbacks? What was it? You had to be at least a 2-year starter or something, or a 3-year starter.
I don't remember.
You know, spend a number of years. But Parcells had certain parameters that he put on quarterbacks to, you know, the guys that he deemed, quote unquote, draftable. You know, the kind of guy that he wanted, and I'll see if I can find them online maybe during a break. But there was a metric like that with Parcells, and I kind of, I don't mind that. I mean, I think sometimes these guys could benefit from a little bit more experience in college, even if it's not the pro game.
You make it to your senior, and you're in a big program or a biggish program like Missouri, you stink.
Yeah, I'm not convinced of
that. In terms of making the NFL. If you had enough talent, you would have already went into the league and got that money. You stick around for your fourth year, the hell out of here.
I mean, so I wonder, like, but look, it's not apples to apples, Murray, right? It's not apples to apples. But Buddy Hield in the NBA, he was in college for 4 years. I mean, he developed. And now they have something closer to a ready-made product.
Football's not quite the same.
No, it's not. That's why I said it's not apples to apples.
In basketball, if you make it out of your sophomore year for sure, but even your freshman year, it's like, well, if you were any good, you would have been drafted. Like, I get that. I get that, Murray. In football, it's a little different, especially quarterback. I don't know.
Carson Wentz played like 8 games total, if I recall.
Really?
Before he came out, yeah.
I don't even pay attention what years these guys are. Like, was Goff a senior? Wentz wasn't a senior?
No.
Not even close.
Kyler Murray barely played. He's going to be the number one pick.
Kyler Murray was what? Was he a sophomore or a junior?
Don't you have to be at least a junior to come out?
I don't even know the rules anymore. I don't.
Yeah, you have to be a junior at least to come out. Now, I don't know if you've started 3 years. I don't know how many kids start as freshmen anymore. The kid in Georgia did. The kid at Clemson has. Like, or he started this past year, jumped in the middle of the year anyway. So, like, you know, I think the reps are important there. Like, it's a slow process at that position. I don't mind it being a senior.
Okay, so guarantee now they're not going to draft Drew Lock at 32 because Cashley said he has him in a mock draft, and Bill would never give him the satisfaction. Bill would rather sacrifice the future of the team than give Charlie Cashley the satisfaction of nailing a Patriots draft pick.
So I just found the Parcells thing, if you care.
Yeah.
Okay? Has to be a senior because you need time and maturity to develop. Has to be a graduate because you want someone who takes his responsibilities seriously. 3-year starter and at least 23 wins.
Jeez.
Those were Parcells' guidelines.
Okay. Different era, too, but I'd hate to be hamstrung by those.
Well, so I throw graduate right out the window.
Oh, my God.
Hey, get rid of that one.
And 3-year starter?
Yeah, and I throw that. I'd say at least 2. Like, that would, you know, and that doesn't mean, you know, there can always be exceptions to the rule. But I don't mind the idea that, you know, I think basically what he's saying there is the position can take a little longer. Maturity and intelligence are important, and experience. I kind of agree with that.
Okay, so that's one item. You want to weigh in on that? 617-779-0985. We've been talking about this, and we will continue to talk about it. Your thoughts on them taking a quarterback at 32? I love the idea. Love it. Love the idea. They have to love the player, though. I'm not telling you just to take a quarterback to take a quarterback, but I love the idea of it. You also want to weigh in on Aaron Rodgers? You got some douche chills listening to Aaron Rodgers yesterday in Milwaukee. Jimmy, can we pull that cut up here that Maz had on Aaron Rodgers? No? Yes?
One, if they knew that, why would they?
Hold on. I just want to know that you have it and hear me. You just want to set it up at all?
Okay, so look, last week, obviously, there was a story in the Bleacher Report detailing the rift between Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers that ultimately brought down the Packers and ultimately ended McCarthy's career as head coach of Green Bay. Since that time, McCarthy has come out and said that the story about him getting the massages, and there was a detail in there that while the team was practicing on the field, assistants were running the practices, McCarthy was upstairs getting a massage. I mean, the image of it is like, you got to be kidding me.
Tremendous.
Totally. So McCarthy came out and said that that's bull crap. And then Rodgers in the last day or so has similarly responded to some of the allegations in the story. Jimmy, I know there's one that's more broad in scope, him talking about, you know, the writer wanting to make a name for himself and trying to assess or respond to comments made by former teammates. That's the one that interests me first. Go ahead.
Not to mention unnamed sources. I mean, put your name onto something. The same two guys, every time there's something about me, it's the same two guys. I was 15 feet away in the locker room from you for years. If you had a problem with my leadership, come talk to me. If you have a problem about the way I'm doing something, or if I said something you didn't like, come talk to me. This is years later now. They haven't been in our locker room, and it's the same tired stories. Thankfully, and I really, truly, truly appreciate my teammates for backing me up, but they're just telling the truth. They're just telling their experience with me and the truth about who I am.
Okay, so in some of these cuts, too, there's one where he actually calls guys disgruntled and, you know, former teammates.
He's talking about Greg Jennings and JerMichael Finley.
Right, absolutely. And he sounds like the bitter, nasty guy that the story makes him out to be. Like, he starts taking on these former teammates, and one of the whole lead of the story, basically, is that Rodgers and McCarthy were doomed from the start because McCarthy was on the San Francisco staff when they had the number one pick the year that they drafted Alex Smith over Aaron Rodgers. And as a result, when McCarthy ended up in Green Bay, Rodgers still held it against him. And to hear Rodgers respond to those teammates publicly on the air and criticize them the way he did makes him sound, it makes it totally believable what was written in that story. That once Rodgers has a grudge, he buries you forever and you are done. And so, like, again, and then there were details about Rodgers' life that are sort of, you know, painted with a broad brush in the story, but is falling out with his family, meaning his parents and his siblings, like all of that really lets you believe, boy, this guy's a different kind of animal. I mean, he's a
douchebag.
He holds something against people. He does. He just does not accept human flaws.
No, he's got issues, man. He's got issues. Like, I'm not talking football issues, coachability issues, diva issues. Like, he's got issues that get in the way and that I think are a factor there in Green Bay. And I this story brought it out. And in his defense, I think you saw some of those things come through. As you mentioned, absolutely. So we have more sound of Aaron Rodgers. We'll play more thoughts on football if you want. I'll have a Bruins minute for you coming up as well. We'll get to all of it right after Murray's update.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Hey, the 82 preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. So don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, every opening tip to all those buzzer beaters, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. And if you're new to sports betting, it's super easy to get started. Try betting on something simple like a team to win. Go to the app, select your team, and place your first bet. That's simple. And here's something to sweeten the deal. For new customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use the code SPORTSHUB. And if you're a new customer, you'll get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's only on DraftKings.
Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball terms.
Felger and Mass.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
And it's a performance-driven industry. In the playoffs, everything's magnified. You're obviously on a much shorter time frame. You know, you lose, you're done. So, you have to make some of these judgments quickly. And hopefully the players realize that, you know, listen, we're going with the best guy that day. And then what we've done around here, I think, for, you know, last 2-3 years is we're trying to put the best guys out there. And the next day is a new day. We move on to the next game. Guys get second and third chances to sort of go back in if they've proven they can handle that. And it would be no different in that position, that's for sure.
The last part there. You hear the last part? At that position, he's talking about the goaltending position. It's Bruins coach Bruce Cassidy on this morning with TNR. Okay? And he's asked about the goaltending situation. I'm sorry to, this, here's your Bruins, man. I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but I get a little frustrated by the coverage, and I'll tell you what I'm talking about in a minute. But so Cassie's on with TNR this morning, and they asked him about the goaltending situation, and he says what he's been saying for a couple of months now. Performance-driven industry. You just heard him. You're going with the best that day, especially now. And we have a thing here where we play the best guys. You have a chance to work your way back. You get another crack at it, and tomorrow's a new day, but you go with the best guy, and that's certainly the case at that position. Okay? He's treating goalie like he would third-line left wing, which is not saying we're riding and dying with Tuukka Rask. He's treating it like another position, meaning the position is kind of open. Rask has to play well to keep the spot. And I feel like too many guys that cover the team just sort of like ignore that. Like they're not listening to, are you listening? Are you listening? And again, I'm going to mention Kevin Paul DuPont, who does this a lot. He's very defensive of Tuukka. Very defensive of him. On the Globe, they have this round table where they ask their hockey writers these questions going into the playoffs. And questioner, I think this was in yesterday's paper, how will Tuukka Rask do? Is he on a short leash? Question. Porter, the other beat guy, Matt Porter, says the Bruins would love a drama-free spring in that area, sort of leaving it open. DuPont, here's his answer. Rask will be fine. Classic case of a fan base prone to scapegoating. They didn't ask you that. But talk about getting your backup immediately, defending your guy. Rask will be fine. Classic case of a fan base prone to scapegoating. He still takes the arrows for those two goals in the span of 17 seconds that wiped out their chances in the Cup in 2013. The Bruins had lots, all caps, of problems in that series, and Rask was not one of them. Yet such is the goalie life. Kevin's got his back up too much about the defending his position on the goalie as opposed to using his eyes and listening to what's being said to him. Listen to the coach. Report on what the coach is saying. The coach has been saying now pretty much all season, but certainly in the last couple weeks, time and time and time again, it's a goalie tandem. We're comfortable with both guys. The best guy plays. It's a performance-driven industry. We're going with the best guy that day. He's not saying it's Tuukka Rask and that's it and you're making a scapegoat of him. That's not what the coach is saying. But I don't feel like these writers report that. None of them.
Look, again, you know, to me what happens, and it's happened to me, but goalie in hockey is a lightning rod position, right? It's pass fail. That's it. There's no in between. So DuPont's covered hockey a lot, long time. He hears people griping about the goalie and he's tuned it out because he said, well, this is a standard thing. You're just bitching about the goalie. But I don't think there's any question. If you listen to Cassidy, the leash is short.
Listen to what Cassidy's saying and tell us what he's saying.
The leash is short.
It's really not that hard to figure out. How do you think the coach feels? The coach has Rask as his number one and is fine with him. And he should be because Rask is good. But the other guy's good too. The other guy's ready to go. And this year, it's a performance-driven industry. Notice what he's not saying. He's not saying Tuukka Rask is our guy and we will live and die with Tuukka Rask. That is not what he's saying because that's not what the situation is. And Rask has left that door ajar by some playoff performances that haven't been so hot. And I don't even need to go back to 2013. I keep bringing up 2013, not just the last couple of years. Listen to what the coach is saying. It's pretty clear.
If there, to say that there's or act like there's not a track record, you've been sticking your head in the sand when it comes to this guy, or to be this defensive about it. Isn't there a small part of you, though, that wants to see the Bruins win this game like 5-4 and those four goals are ugly just to see what happens in game two? Because it would be Halak in game two if they were ugly goals.
Well, I mean, what you'd want to see.
Soft, I mean.
I mean, what you'd want to see just to blow up. Like, all these, this, I just think the guys are overprotective and overrate the guys here who were through that cup run. And they've all gotten the same treatment. Claude got the same treatment, and Shirelli got the same treatment, and Louis Erickson got the treatment. Like, I know he came after, but you know, all these guys get the same treatment. Like, they're untouchables. And it's so obvious now that Claude wasn't the guy that you thought he was. And I think Rask is something along the same lines. Is he good enough to win with if everything else works out? Yes, he's good enough to win with. I think you could win with him if everything else falls into place, just like everything fell into place for Claude. But like, to teach these guys is, you know, simple question. How do you think Rask will do? DuPont, Rask will be fine. Classic case of fan base prone to scapegoating. Like, why does he immediately go to the fan base thing, the talk show thing? Tell me about how the goalie has played and how the coach has treated him. And just take your cues from that. DuPont again goes back to the middle of the year. He went on a 16-0-3 tear this year once he got his game settled. Frankly, it took him too long to find his groove this season. Oh, there you go. That's true. But he's among the top 6 to 8 tenders in the game and has been since taking over the gig full-time in 2012 and 13 upon the departure of Tim Thomas. Halak is good, too, he says, as a backup. They have the luxury this year, in my opinion, of spotting in Halak. If, say, a game goes to double or triple overtime, they would not have to go again with Rask on after only a one-day rest. So that's it. What if the performance isn't there? And what do you think the coach will do? So it just frustrates me that I don't think enough of these guys that are defending Tuukka Rask are actually listening to what the coach is saying. Listen to the coach and tell me what you think he feels and what's coming up here.
Yeah, and the other thing is, look, he talked about a lot of things in that interview this morning. He also, when in assessing the goalie situation, said, I think our team is comfortable with either guy out there.
So we'll play that cut coming up. Like his whole tone for months, especially the last couple of weeks as we get close to the playoffs, has been it's a tandem. We like both guys. It's a performance-driven industry. Use your head. Use your ears. Listen to what he's saying. He also has an interesting lineup thing with it looks like David Backus is out. David Backus, and that's a whole nother thing to bitch about, you know, $5 million, $6 million a year?
$6 million.
Holy crap. He's going to be scratched in game one. And Cassie's rationale, I think, is pretty sound. Here's that.
First game, we're looking at probably dressing our fastest lineup. We've got a couple more days to decide and sort through it, but that's kind of the direction we're going. So that might keep Backus out of game one. But his role changed a little the second half of the year. He became a much more of a physical player, back to his roots, so to speak. He had had some injuries, and I think it took him a while to sort of grab onto that. He played very well for us.
Okay, speed.
Yeah, I don't think, again, like this is the right way to go. It's going to be a fast series. Toronto's fast. So you're going to have Backus out there? Like, this is the right move. This is one of the things I really like about Cassidy. It is merit-based.
No question.
Or strategy-based.
Right, well, he's not just
playing his guys.
Right, Claude. His trusted little veterans, the Fribble crew, the guys he went out to Fribbles with. Right, it's not. It's merit-based, and it's matchup-based. And it's what he wants to do with that fourth line. You know, and this is where Achari being out is going to, Corrali being out is going to hurt you. But all things equal, he wants Corrali, Achari, and Wagner to check Austin Matthews or the Tavares line, one of the two. You know, Bergeron probably gets one of them, and he wants that fourth line to get the other. And I still think he does. That's why he has Nordstrom down there. So I think it's now Nordstrom, Achari, Wagner. And those guys are going to get either the Tavares line or the Matthews line at home anyway, when Bruce Cassidy can match him up. Is he going to have David Backus out there, that dinosaur, trying to keep up with Mitch Marner or one of those guys, one of those wingers on one of those lines?
No way. The other thing is, like, you know, I was sniffing around a little about this morning just to get an idea. Achari's not the fastest guy in the world either.
Right, he's not.
So you're going to have him with Achari out there together? So this gives them a little bit of a blend, right, in that Nordstrom's a little bit more of a speed guy. Achari's a little bit more of a physical guy. Wagner's a little bit of both. So, you know, you really give a little bit. If you're Backus out there with that line, you're two slow guys. It's no good.
Can't keep up.
Can't do it.
Okay. So those are two interesting items this morning from the TNR interview with Cassidy. Catch the whole thing online at 98.5thesportshub.com or on the app. We'll get to your calls, I promise. The football and the hockey to you right after this.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5
The Sports Hub.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Hey, the 82 preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. So don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, every opening tip to all those buzzer beaters, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. And if you're new to sports betting, it's super easy to get started. Try betting on something simple like a team to win. Go to the app, select your team, and place your first bet. That's simple. And here's something to sweeten the deal. For new customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use the code SPORTSHUB. And if you're a new customer, you'll get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's only on DraftKings.
Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gambling helpline MA.org. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/basketball terms.
B.O.B. Boob.
Oh, my God. Isn't that Bob?
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Well, I'd feel comfortable with either guy in nets. Like, if Tuukka was hurt and Locke had to start, I think our guys play equally well in front of both goaltenders. For us to use one or the other, I don't think it's a big deal in our locker room. I think that's what you got to be careful of. You pull your starter, throw a guy in there, the rest of the guys are looking at you like, what the hell are you doing, you know? But I think our guys realize that we're on with both, so it shouldn't be a big issue if we have to go down that road.
Okay, more Cassidy on the goaltending situation. Just listen to the coach. Listen to the coach, what he said and the tone and everything. He's talked about both guys. And he's treating it like another position. He said it point blank this morning. It's just like another position. It's a performance-based industry. All right, back to your phones. As promised, we've got Mike and Quincy left over on opening day. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I was just wondering, I heard a stat, and it's mostly for Tony, the baseball guy. It says that the Red Sox had 119 opening days, and 108 were at Fenway. Is that true? And is that like the highest of any other team? And then just real quick on Tuukka Rask, as I feel as though it's not just the playoffs he doesn't play up to par. It's any high-pressure situation. He just doesn't know how to elevate his game to everyone around him.
Okay, I think there's something to that. I think Rask is steady and consistent. And, you know, DuPont said he's one of the 6 to 8 best goaltenders in the league since they went to the Cup in 2013. I think he's probably right. When you balance it out and average it out over the last 7 years, and Matt just looked it up, save percentages in the NHL since 2013, last 7 years. Or 6 years, whatever that is. Tuukka Rask ranks
fifth.
Fifth. So you want to tell me he's a top five goalie over the last 7 years on balance? Yeah, sure. Any given year, he hasn't been a top five guy in a long time. And now different guys move into that top five. It's year to year, which sort of speaks to the consistent system goalie. But does he ever elevate? And this now gets into the playoffs where you need to steal games and series. And I've never felt he's been that guy. So we'll see. All I know is the coaches treat him like equals. What's that stat he was talking about? What the hell is he talking about?
So, look, the number of opening days at Fenway Park. And the ballpark opened in 1912. You know, so the 108 opening days at Fenway Park, I think, is accurate. Is that the most in baseball? I think Wrigley Field is older. So I don't know when, you know, did they miss years in there, Wrigley? I don't know. But honestly, I really don't care.
HK. 617-779-0985. Fred in the car. Go ahead, Fred.
I'm just really confident in Tuukka. I don't know why everyone hates him. If you put your little goal percentage, save percentage, back from 6, 7, 10 years, he's the best goalie of 10 years in save percentage. He's in the top 10 of save percentage in goalies who have played 20 or 30 games in the playoffs. I think he's going to be fine. It's a great thing to have Halak to back him up in case he does have a hiccup. But the Tuukka hate is unreal. Like, nationally, I think people scratch their heads what's going on in Boston. And I'm so happy to see Backus riding the pine. The guy's a bum.
Okay, I think the Backus move is the right move. He's no bum. He's just slow.
He's done.
And the thing with Rask is, see, this is where I think you run into it. It's like, yeah, balance. So average it out over 10 years. He's got great numbers. No question. Those 10-year career numbers, solid. Solid. And if you were saying to me, give me a goalie to guarantee a B-plus kind of performance, I very might... You know, might take Rask. I might take Rask over Holpe, who got benched at the end of last year, or Marc-Andre Fleury, who's been up and down and in of a job, out of a job, like up and down and up and down. Rask is more consistent. But can he go on that run and elevate you?
If you said B, I'd agree with you. B plus feels a little high.
Well, whatever. You know, I mean, he's that guy. I think he's going to average out and balance you out and give you the B plus performance, pretty steady, pretty consistently, almost guaranteed. Against Tampa, I think you need more than that. You need a guy to stand on his head a couple of those games, at least. And is he capable of it? And is he capable of it? He's always struggled against Toronto, I think, because of their speed and they score off the rush so much, where he's a little, you know, I don't know whether it's he doesn't have time to get set or it's just not his. If it's not, you know, a half court situation, just follow my analogy, where he can be set and on his angle, but when it's on the rush, it's a little different. And I think maybe that's why he struggles against Toronto. I don't think he's had great. He hasn't been great in the playoffs against Toronto, that's for sure, the last two times.
So the regular season numbers are good. I was going to say, my recollection with Tuukka was that it was opposite. He's 17-7 with a .925 save percentage against Toronto in his career.
It's good.
2.13 goals against.
In the playoffs, give me those numbers.
Okay, so those I'll have to look up for you.
Matt in Seekonk. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, I think Rask deserves to be on a short leash just because down the stretch, he gave up a couple soft goals. Like one against Tampa, I think it was in the second period. It was just a wrist shot coming over the blue line. It was horrible, absolutely horrible. And there was one a couple weeks ago, I think it was against Carolina. It was just they were coming back in the game, and he gave up just a weak goal. He's been terrible recently, and I don't really trust him in this playoff series.
Okay.
I would go to Halak, definitely.
Okay, so
quick.
Terrible is too strong. It's not terrible. But it looks to me that it's one of two things. The coach isn't completely sold, and he's got his finger on the button. Or he's just trying to motivate the guy, which is fine too. And let me tell you, this, that if he's trying to motivate the guy, what does that say? You know, it says, you know, back to the first thing, that the Cassie isn't totally comfortable with him. So I think the caller went too far there. But again, just listen to the coach. It's really not that hard to figure out. Matt in Framingham and the Patriots, now no shot of drafting a quarterback at 32 because Charlie Casserly said so. What do you got, Matt?
Well, first, I just want to congratulate the Red Sox on a World Series championship. That's a huge accomplishment. Proud of them. And obviously the Boston Celtics and somehow getting that four seed in the most lopsided Eastern Conference as far as being bad I've ever seen in my life. So what I want to say about the Patriots as far as the quarterback is I think that Dawn is going to take Locke at 10 for sure. I think that's going to be the reemergence of him picking quarterbacks, you know, after the whole Osweiler thing. And for Belichick, that's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to put it out there like he's going to do it. But he doesn't want to draft. He's not going to draft a quarterback high at all. He's going to wait for another team to draft someone like Rosen at like 6.
And plumb his cut off and pluck him off that way. I'm not so sure of that. If he likes the guy, he likes the guy. Whether he's drafting him out of college or taking him after a year or two in the NFL. I don't think he'd hesitate to draft a quarterback 32.
Yeah, to me, I rule nothing out when it comes to the Patriots doing anything. I mean, we just know Bill's unpredictable, for crying out loud. But I do think that they're playing possum a little bit with the quarterbacks because there's someone out there that they like. Who it is, I have no idea. But I go all the way back to that. I think it was McBride or Volan in the Globe. I don't remember which one. Had something in there about how they like Etling. Don't be surprised if they stand pat. And I'm sorry, I smell a rat when I see that. That reeked of Ryan Mallett to me and arm talent. And Ryan Mallett popped at practice today in the whole 9 yards. I smell a rat. They to me, it feels like they're going to do something there.
Chuck, give me a Patriots. A Bruins talk quickly.
I'm just so happy that they benched back. This is something that Claude never would have done.
Agreed.
We're so happy we have Cassidy. And on Tuca, listening to Cassidy this morning, I just think he really has his finger on the button. Tuca can't elevate his game for the playoffs. He plays, like you said, a B-plus game. And when you need a goalie to steal a game for you in the playoffs, Tuca's not able to do that. He plays the same game, or even worse, a bad game. He's not able to elevate his game, and you need a goalie to do that in the playoffs. Hang up and listen to
you. Agreed, especially this Bruins team. If they're going to get past some of these teams they're facing in the first couple rounds. I mean, they're just – Tampa's better than them. So goaltending absolutely has to be a big part of that series. If you even get there, it has to be a big part of this series. Toronto's a better offensive team than you. So you're going to need it this series. Never mind the next one. You survived barely against Toronto the last two times in the playoffs with average goaltending, average. I wouldn't want to do that again. And you know what? They're not. They're not going to do it again. If Rask plays the way he played last year against Toronto, this year against Toronto, you'll see Halak in this series. The coach has said it. And if you just open your ears, you won't be surprised because the coach has been implying it the entire way. All right, you want to continue weighing on the Bruins and some of our football thoughts? By all means, we've got you covered all day long at 617-779-0985. Coming up next, the latest indication, the latest example of replay ruining sports. Don't go anywhere. No commercials here.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information.
Hey, the 82 preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. So don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, every opening tip to all those buzzer beaters, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and much more. And if you're new to sports betting, it's super easy to get started. Try betting on something simple like a team to win. Go to the app, select your team, and place your first bet. That's simple. And here's something to sweeten the deal. For new customers, bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Again, use the code SPORTSHUB. And if you're a new customer, you'll get $200 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. That's only on DraftKings.
Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gambling helpline MA.org. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/bet. Basketball terms.
Looking for a place to eat that has a little something for everyone? Come to Route 1 Grill House in Saugus. The most mouth-watering dishes, such as their ribs, steak tips, seafood, and pizzas. Wash it down with their extensive martini list and large selection of draft beer. Route 1 Grill House has a private function room that accommodates up to 70 guests for any function. This is the spot for you and your friends as the weather gets warmer with their outdoor seating. Come on in to the family-owned Route 1 Grill House in Saugus, the perfect place to be.